Thank you, Pamela Capellan, for speaking with me. I first heard about your work after my sister invited you over to her apartment for brunch to talk about her finances. So what is the concept behind brunch and budget?
I love that. That's so awesome. So thank you for having me, first of all. I'm so excited to be on. The concept for brunch and budget is kind of exactly what it sounds like. We literally, pre-pandemic, of course, we had a meal and would talk about your finances. And I would meet people for brunch at restaurants, or just like what your sister did, I definitely had people invite me over to their homes and make a meal. And, you know, the reason behind the brunch aspect of it really came from people being really nervous and scared to talk about their finances. And for some reason, food just makes everything easier. That's really where it came from. It came from a lot of my friends asking me questions and really not knowing where to start. And what I found was that, you know, breaking bread with someone, having a meal with them, sharing food, just really changed the dynamic. And it really allowed people to feel more comfortable to have this conversation. We just have so much shame and embarrassment around money. You know, we're told that we made all these mistakes. We feel very alone in it. That's what I've learned, you know, working with people through brunch and budget. And the brunch part of it, the food part of it, really, I don't know, it really just, it really allowed us to find some common ground and really, and have some real conversations around it.
To repeat what you said, for people, they're overwhelmed and embarrassed about their finances. So how does trauma factor into people's money habits?
Oh, it's such a huge factor. Our relationship with money is something that starts really, really young, younger than you think. I co-founded a financial literacy program for youth called Pockets Change. And we were doing a workshop with 5 and 6 year olds. And a 6 year old came up to us and said, "Hey, are we talking about money today? I hope not, because I'm bad at money." You know, and she was six. Right? And so these ideas about money and this relationship with money that we have as adults actually started really young. And it started with how our parents talked to or didn't talk to us about money, the stress that was at home, and also really just like the bombardment of people telling you what you should be doing, where you should be, how much money you should have, what you should and shouldn't buy, how much you should or shouldn't have saved. And I think we start getting those signals early, like 5 and 6 year olds know whether they're savers or spenders, right? What does that even mean? Do they have money? Do they have income? Do they have jobs? No, but their parents tell them like, "Wow, you spend a lot of money," or "Wow, you're really good at saving." And I think those kinds of even like seemingly innocent things carry with us through adulthood. I think the other thing about trauma and money that is really unaddressed is, you know, we do a lot of work around the racial wealth divide. And the reason why that's so important is because we have a lot of clients of color who are now currently like the, you know, financial breadwinner for multiple generations of family, right? They're making more money than their families did. They were the first in their family to go to college. They don't have a history of home ownership. And what we've seen too with a lot of our clients of color is if they grew up in poverty, then even no matter how much income you make, if you don't really figure out what your money habits are that came from poverty, then it's really hard to move forward, right? Because there's so many habits that are not only generational, but they're habits that were designed to help your family survive, but not necessarily thrive.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned kids and the environment that we all grow up in. Is there some advice that you would give to a parent who wants to create a healthy environment for their kids in relationship to finances?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that it's going to be different at every age, but it's going to be important to start talking to your kids about money and start talking to them about what it means if you say we can't afford this or we can't afford that. I'll tell you personally, for me, I have kind of been exploring my own childhood and around money recently. And one of the things that I realized was, so my mom lost her job when I was young. I didn't know that had happened, but I did know that there was a lot of tension and stress in the house. And it seemed like it was about money, and I didn't know why. And I think that if my mom had sat me down and found a way to tell me that she lost her job, even at that age, I thought it was me. I thought, because kids always think it's them, right? You always think that you're the reason why your parents are stressed or mad or angry. And I associated that with money too. And so I think that as a parent, we want to shield our kids from these things, but they already pick up on that stuff. They can already sense it. And I just want to encourage parents, because kids make up these stories in their heads already, to reveal some of the reality of what's actually going on when it comes to money.
Brunch and Budget is much more than just a financial advising service, but a lot of what you do is educate people on the ties between finances and injustice. How important is it to understand the history of financial injustice, to understand your current financial hardships and also the community around you?
Oh my gosh, it is. I always say you can't talk about money without talking about race. The racial wealth divide exists because not only were there policies and programs in this country that were enacted by the federal government to perpetuate a racial wealth divide and to perpetuate specifically Black Americans not being able to build wealth for generations and generations and generations, right? Starting with chattel slavery and then along the way denying Black Americans homeownership, the ability to own homes, you know, denying Black Americans the ability to have higher paying jobs, all of those kinds of things, you know, even just seeing most recently like the cost of college going up as soon as we started telling people of color that college was the only way to get a good job, right? So this kind of stuff still shows up currently today. And I think that if we don't examine that, one, there's two sides of it. I think that understanding, one, that it's not your fault necessarily that you didn't get a higher paying job, that you have student loan debt, that you don't own a home right now, right? I think the other side of it is recognizing what privileges you do have. I think that one thing that I always think being the exact same income, right? They're each making $100,000 and one client is able to save and they're on their way to buying a house and, you know, they don't have any student loan debt. And then we have another client who has trouble saving, has credit card debt, has student loan debt, is sending money back home to their parents. They're the ones paying for their family's cell phone plan. And so even though they're making the same amount of income, the financial obligations often of our clients of color are just tenfold that of our white clients. And so I think examining money and injustice together is one of the critical parts to not only establishing your own like personal financial success and what that means for you, but to also think of your personal finances as an act of revolution. I think that when we understand the history of it and how these systems work, we're able to empower not only ourselves, but also our communities to actually pass policies that move all of us forward.
What are some actions that our listeners can take against the racial divide?
The thing that I always think about is how much being afraid of your money stops you from doing things that would actually help your money. And what I mean by that is I have, just to give you an example, I have a lot of clients who are freelancers and they've been freelancers for a while, right? Like before the gig economy was a thing, you know, especially a lot of creative people were making 1099 income. And a lot of them come to me and they're like, Pam, I haven't filed my taxes in 4 years.
Wow.
Right? I was told to get paid under the table. I was told to hide my money from the IRS. You know, I filed my taxes 1 year and I got a big tax bill. So I was just too afraid to file them again. What ends up happening is that you end up not being able to buy a home. You end up not being able to increase your income. You end up always wanting to just tread right above water because you're afraid that if you make more money that the tax people will come and arrest you. Like I've literally had people say, I don't want to go to jail. So I've just been hiding for 4 years, right? And when you're in that position, it feels like that you can't do anything except for survive. And I mentioned earlier, you know, the difference between surviving and thriving and the habits that we have that either help us survive or help us thrive. And I think one of the things when it comes to personal finance is what are the things that you're doing that someone told you to do that are actually you feel like that you're going to get in big trouble? Because what I will tell you right now is everything is fixable. Everything is fixable. There's things that we can get figured out. And from what I've seen in all of the clients that we've worked with, sometimes it really is just a matter of taking your hands away from in front of your eyes and saying like, let me just look at where I am today, because then I can figure out like what needs to happen next. And when you stop feeling disempowered, when you stop feeling like you have to hide from anything, right, when it comes to your money, then that's when you can really start to learn how to advocate for yourself. That's a big thing that we talk about, is it's not just about getting your money in order. And we're really against the idea of personal responsibility and the idea of personal responsibility rhetoric. And just to really explain what that means, a lot of personal finance is around, well, it's your fault, You just didn't do it right. You got into credit card debt because you were irresponsible. You spent money frivolously. You didn't save enough. All of these things are placed on the individual without taking into account what the context of your situation is. And I think that when you start to understand the actual context of your situation and you can see how your personal finances really play into that, that's really when you can really start to like advocate for yourself too.
So one of the stressful situations for myself with money is understanding that there's the things that you invest in. There's, you know, if I invest in a bank, the banks are pretty much always involved in really terrible things. The food that you mm-hmm. are buying is maybe being picked by underwage laborers who are not in good conditions. It's all packed in plastic. So how can people balance investing in yourself and also spending in alignment with your values?
Ooh, yes, that is always a difficult question. And one of the things that we like to say, because one, everything you just said was like, holy shit, why should I even try? That's so overwhelming, right?
Right.
Why should I even try? And I think that's kind of the spiral that a lot of us go down is, well, if I do this one thing, but I don't do this other thing, then I'm not perfect at it and I should just give it all up. And I feel like we do that with our money too, right? Oh, I thought I was going to save $100 this month, but I only saved $75. So it failed. I'm just going to give it all up. And I think we do that too when it comes to trying to spend with our values and also investing in ourselves. Is the reality is we live in a capitalist system. So no individual action that you take is going to be perfect. That's just impossible, right? Until we start to see our systems change, then I think on an individual level, one of the things that we like to say is instead of trying to boycott something, we encourage you to boycott things. So it's not about saying no to a company or an organization. It's about saying yes to a different one that fulfills the same need, but that you feel good about. So you don't have to worry about all the things that you should have said no to in your head, but you couldn't because of whatever circumstance you were in, but feel good about the things you're able to say yes to. And as you're able to say yes to more and more of those purchases that are in line with your values, then you'll look back and you'll see like, oh my gosh, most of my money is going towards places that I value. Most of my money is intentionally getting spent in alignment with my values. And I think that's really the best place to start is saying yes to things that you really believe in first.
What are some of the topics that you address in Brunch and Budget podcast?
Yeah, we like to say that our podcast is about personal finance and racial economic inclusion. I think that again, when it comes to understanding the systemic stuff in the context of your personal finances, we have to address all of it, right? And it's really complex. And so just to give you an idea, one of the most recent episodes we had is the racist history of insurance and why you need it anyway, right? The insurance company you go with is going to be far from perfect. They're going to have done terrible things in the past. They're currently doing terrible things now, and you still need insurance to protect your wealth. So how do we understand how that works and still be able to protect our personal finances at the same time? And I think that's really like an encapsulation of what we talk about on the podcast. It's not, again, like you said, it's not just about personal finance. It's not just about the racial wealth divide. I think that the intersection of those things and the way that we try and address those topics is one of the main missions of the podcast, because we're also big believers that a lot of the personal finance rhetoric was created because of culture and art and media. And I think that when we start to shift our mindset and our culture and our media more in the direction of understanding these things and not have it be about like, oh, it's all your fault. If you just do all the right things, you'll be all right. Because that's not what happens, right? But if we start to shift the culture and start to make it something where people are not only informed about their finances, but they're informed about the financial system and the system that got us to where we are today and the system that created the racial wealth divide, then collectively, we're all able to make that cultural shift. And that's, I think, where the overwhelm starts to dissipate a little bit, right? Because you let go of your need as an individual to do everything perfectly. Because at the end of the day, capitalism is about the individual, and we need to shift towards a more collective voice and a more collective culture around taking care of everybody.
So how can our listeners find more about Brunch and Budget? How can we find you?
If you go to brunchandbudget.com, that's all the info for our services, for our podcast, brunchandbudget.com/podcast. We're also on every podcast platform, so you can just search for Brunch and Budget. And we are also on Twitter and Instagram at Brunch and Budget.
Thank you so much for speaking with me. I think our listeners are going to get a lot out of this.
Thank you so much.